You're listening to Black People Go to Therapy Too, a podcast about people of color and their experiences in therapy. Don't forget to subscribe and spread the word that we're now available on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, and Spotify. Now let's begin our session. Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Black People Go to Therapy Too. I am your host, BJ Rudd, LPC, and today we have the pleasure of speaking with Ayanna. So Ayanna, I'll go ahead and let you tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey guys, like BJ said, my name is Ayanna. I'm 26 and I live in the DC, Baltimore area. I've been here for almost a decade, which is like really crazy to think about. I am Black. That's why I'm here, because I'm Black and I go to therapy too. Yes. And I'm cisgendered, female, heterosexual. So I really just been like trying to navigate just living my life as a, you know, mid-20s woman out here. It's been ups and downs.
I know. I mean, 2020 has been a lot more downs than the ups, but you know, it's how we frame it. But yeah, tell me a little bit about what it was like growing up in that area for you. Yeah, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, so I actually grew up in North Carolina. Growing up in North Carolina, I mean, where I grew up, I definitely like grew up in a really privileged area, which was a really unique experience because I don't necessarily come from like the most wealthy family. Like we definitely are very comfortable, but the area that I grew up in was like, I'd say one of the more like excess wealth areas of the city that I grew up in. And so, you know, I think navigating like, you know, being a Black girl in like an all white school and like, you know, that stereotypical, like only Black kid in your class kind of thing was definitely a challenge. It's definitely something that like has shaped me today because, you know, you really grow up like learning how to determine like who is for you and like who isn't, because, you know, there's so many times where it's like, well, you know, you're not like Black enough for the Black kids, but you're not white enough for the white kids and stuff like that. So you really just have to like learn how to forge your own path really early on. And actually, I think like this will come up, I think the more we get into like my therapy journey, but just like, you know, coming from like a comfortable home just has had like a huge impact on the care that I've been able to receive. From a therapy standpoint.
Yeah, and I really relate to that sort of being like tokenized, like growing up with majority of like white kids in my class, and really feeling like very in between, like you said, like being around Black kids but not feeling Black enough, being around white people but knowing I'm never going to be white. And even having those questions that like I had a lot of the Black kids were like, you want to be white so bad. And like, I was always like, no, I don't. But also like you are telling me that I'm not Black. So like, I don't even know what I want to be. So like really forging your own path, discovering your identity and finding one that just like speaks to your experience. I mean, I know it's a hard process, but I'm sure it's just like a beautiful journey too.
Yeah. I mean, it culminated in me going to an HBCU, and I didn't really go to an HBCU because like I necessarily like wanted a Black experience, but it was just so uncomfortable. Like when I would tour and like, I hated the experience and like out of nowhere, I was like, you know what, I'm going to go here. And I just knew that it would like grow me a lot. And it was great to like be in a space where like, I didn't have to be like, white or black, I could just like be myself. And like mm-hmm. ever since that, like even like leaving an HBCU and like subsequently going to a PWI and then joining like the real world, mm-hmm. You know, you're just like so much more able to just like be yourself no matter like what environment you're in.
Yeah, I think it's really awesome when like we as Black folks, especially when we've been othered, and that's been a lot of our experience, when we like grow into like meeting other Black folks and people who share our same like hobbies, our same interests, and being like, oh my gosh, like, why did I think there was one sort of Black person? Like, why did I think there was one type? Like, I could have totally been completely feeling like I was fully Black, being as different as I was, liking the things that I like too. So yeah, I can really relate again to like growing up, hitting your 20s and just being around, I guess, a more variety of Black folks, Black and brown folks, honestly, and just seeing that like, yes, I may have grown up this way. I may have had like mostly white peers growing up, but that doesn't mean I hate myself. That doesn't mean that I don't want to be Black too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about when and why you first sought out therapy.
So I didn't really like seek out therapy. It was more like something I had to do, mm-hmm. You know, cause like if you have like a heart attack or something, like you have to see a cardiologist. If you're having mm-hmm. like panic attacks, you have to see a psychologist. And so that's like what happened to me. I was actually very, very, very young. I was 8 years old mm-hmm. and I had a near death choking experience. And after that, like I developed like a severe phobia of swallowing, which like sounds ridiculous, but it's the truth. Like I literally like for 2 days did not eat or drink anything. And like, mm-hmm. it just got to the point where I, you know, was forced to like go on a liquid diet. And I was like so scared to even do that and like scared to even like swallow my saliva. And it was like really, really, really severe. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, of course, like going through that, you know, I had to go to therapy. And I think maybe for about 6 months to a year, I was in mm-hmm. therapy like once a week or so. And you know, I did like your standard, exposure therapy and, cognitive behavioral therapy, and mm-hmm. it worked really well. And I was, you know, like a normal kid for a really long time, like a normal kid going into a normal teenager, going into a normal young adult. Mm-hmm. And then when I was in college, I, for lack of a better word, relapsed out mm-hmm. of like nowhere. Like all of a sudden I just like really quickly was spiraling into like the same symptoms. And, you know, it was even worse this time because it was kind of like that fear of dying was like kind of permeating into other areas. Mm-hmm. And so when that happened, I actually had to drop out of school and go back to therapy. And I've been in, that was almost 5 years ago. And I've been in therapy at least like semi-regularly ever since. Mm-hmm. You know, first, of course, like just, you know, getting treatment for that like anxiety phobia disorder. And then just trying to get back into going to school. And then, mm-hmm. You know, I kind of made a decision to use therapy, you know, as what it's used for more traditionally, which, you know, is to like, you know, just help with navigating through life and stuff like that. But also because, you know, when you go through something like that as an adult, it, mm-hmm. you know, affects so many areas of your life. So even today, you know, it's still something that I have to manage. So at most, or at least, I'll go to therapy like every like 4 months or so, just to make sure that, I'm doing okay. And, yeah, so that's kind of the summary of how I got into therapy.
And what was that like for you? You said you were 8 years old when you first started. Yeah. What did you know about therapy? Did you know like anything about therapy? Was it this thing that was completely like really scary for you as an 8 year old?
I mean, I didn't really know much about therapy. Prior to like having that choking incident, my parents did have me seeing like a therapist for like emotional development, like regular, like childhood development type stuff. Mm-hmm. But that was completely different than, you know, seeing, you know, a psychologist and doing like therapy, like exposure therapy, which can be really intense.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess the thing about being a kid is that like kids are so resilient. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't really like a situation where, you know, I was like scared or like really feeling vulnerable. Like I was, you know, really just kind of like, I guess like a happy-go-lucky kid. And I lost some of that going through this, but it was still a situation where it was like, I was able to just still like be myself. And it was just kind of this thing that was like, this is a thing in my life. And I think the hardest part was just, you know, interacting like with other kids and like, because I was still in school and this was happening. So obviously like my behavior in school was different because like I wasn't eating and things like that. And, you know, like to go through this like emotional thing, you know, as a kid, like that's going to make for like a really emotional kid. And so like I would have like outbursts in class and things like that. And it would be a situation where, you know, like the school like wanted to suspend me or like parents would tell their kids like not to interact with me and things like that. And unfortunately the school I was at the time was segregated, not like officially, but it was. And again, like I just happened to be in the, you know, wider classes. So it ended up being like mostly like white parents like telling their kids like don't go near this person. But all of the like black kids were all in the same class. They were neighborhood kids. I didn't live in that neighborhood. So, you know, I didn't know these kids. And so it was just, you know, it was an alienating experience as an 8-year-old, but I still think that, you know, again, like kids are so resilient. It really is something that I just kind of dealt with and ran through.
Yeah. And in terms of like when you noticed that this kind of like phobia or like the issue was like happening again as an adult, what was that like for you to kind of like think that this was something, you know, that happened as a kid and now that you were had like completely like recovered from it? Or did you not think that you had completely recovered? I guess I should ask that first.
I definitely did think that like for the most part I had completely recovered from it. I always like said I was at like 98%. Like to this day I can't swallow pills, but that's like the only thing that was ever a problem. If anything, there was like maybe like one or two isolated events, but like things I can't even remember, you know? And so it was really surprising for this to happen, and it was like really confusing and really frustrating. And it was also like really scary because there were a lot of new symptoms. So it felt like something was wrong, like physiologically something was wrong. Like I just knew like something was wrong with me. Like I was having like physical sensations of there being something in my throat. So I saw like an ENT and there's nothing there, you know? And so that was like, I think that was probably like the scariest part. You know, once I got to a point where I was like, oh, I'm going to go to like therapy. And once I got to a point where I was able to be like finally matched with the therapist, I was a lot better in the sense that I knew that I would get better because I'd done it before. But I was just like, I need to like actually go through the therapy again and do it. But for a long period of time, it just seemed like it was just very dark because I didn't know what was going on. But I knew I wanted it to stop and like, you know, and there was just like no hope for, you know, finding a provider and things like that. And it was just a lot. It was a confusing time. It was not fun.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. And I think I hear some of that like resilience that you were able to develop, like as an 8-year-old, someone who had gone through therapy too. Like, it's so beautiful that you were still able to know that even though these symptoms seemed like they were coming out of nowhere in adulthood, and like, it was something, like you said, you had 98%, you know, covered, of that you didn't go the other route of being like, wow, I guess therapy doesn't work. I guess I wasn't like cured of this thing, but instead trusted yourself and, you know, the process of therapy too, enough to be like, no, as soon as I find a therapist, like, I'm just going to work on this again and I'm going to recover as I have before.
Yeah.
And tell me a little bit about how you found this therapist later on in life.
Yeah, so I think that's where, like, you know, where I say that, you know, me being privileged has definitely played a huge part in me getting care, because, you know, this was even the same as when I was a kid, like finding a therapist, and we were specifically searching for a psychologist PhD, you know, it's so challenging, especially for someone, you know, with an OCD type phobia disorder. You know, my parents really had to search, like, just through anything that they possibly could. I mean, they searched through, you know, newspaper articles, journal articles, health systems, like TV, even like my childhood psychologist, they found on a TV program. And you know, she was 3 hours away. My parents drove me 3 hours to and from therapy once a week when I was a kid. And it was the exact same thing when I was in school, and I kind of like fell back into, you know, having this condition. Like, I was searching for a therapist. You know, I was preparing myself to try and stay at school. So I registered, you know, with the disability office, which, like, if you're a student and listening and you have any, like, even the smallest level of, you know, like, mental health challenges, register with your disability office. It makes, like, a huge difference. You'll be able to, like, miss tests and make them up and things like that, but that's a total aside. But I always have to say that, because, like, it's the complete difference between being able to, like, graduate on time and things like that, and not.
That's something I've never heard of too. That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't think people know to do that, and I don't even know how I found out about that. I think it was through me going to my school's counseling center when I was searching for, you know, treatment, and they instructed me to do that. But, you know, of course, school counseling centers are so overwhelmed. So, you know, my school counseling center was not able to really do anything for me. They, I mean, like, no shade to student practitioners, but they paired me with this student who just was so off the mark of, you know, what I was going through and what I needed. And so what ended up happening was, my parents came and got me overnight, like, literally drove 8 hours to come get me from school, because I just got so bad. And at the same time, they were in contact with a psychologist at Georgetown. And this was a Black woman, and she had worked at the center that I was treated at as a kid. And so my mom reached out to her and was like, you know, I know you have to have a referral to go to this, to be treated here, but, you know, my child is a student in the area and she's having these symptoms, like, can you help her? And she responded, and she was like, well, this is not my area of expertise, but this person in my office deals with these types of patients, and I'll give you a referral. And so, like, that was the situation where it really was like, you know, it was like who you know kind of thing. But remember, like, at that point, I was on my way home back to North Carolina, and this person is in DC. So I literally had to drive back to DC to meet with her, to set up an initial appointment. And when I was at that initial appointment, she gave me the name of a therapist to see back home. And again, this therapist was 2 hours away from my house. And he's, you know, a top psychologist, he's really, really, really good. And he agreed to take me. But, you know, like, my parents had to drive me 2 hours there and back once a week. This is a private practice, so it's your typical, like, $200 a session. And that's just not something that is, like, feasible for most people. Like, I can't do that right now on my own. I can't afford $200 a week. That's, like, rent in most places. But, you know, because I had, you know, a two-parent household, my parents can switch off, and my parents work, you know, corporate 9-to-5s with disability insurance that extends to their kids, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. they're able to kind of, like, make these, not even sacrifices. I mean, they're sacrifices, but they just don't affect you as much as they would affect someone who, like, doesn't have a car, doesn't have a 9-to-5, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why, that's as much as it can be hard to tell your story, I think that's why, that's what compels me to tell my story the most. It's just because I know, like, how scary it is to be in such a dark place and, like, just have so mm-hmm. much, like, visceral fear and just feel like there's, like, nothing that can be done. And it scares me to think about the amount of people, because I know I've read this, the amount of people who don't get the help that they need because there aren't enough, you know, qualified practitioners, mm-hmm. you know, to treat the amount of people that have, like, these phobia disorders specifically. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And yeah, I think of all those
long explanation.
No, I really, really like that because you bring up so many, like, barriers that we don't talk about enough. But, like, the fact that, like, as a kid, 3 hours for therapy, like, as an adult, 2 hours for therapy. And, like, that was, like, the closest person who could give you the care that you need. That's, like, just shows, again, like, the resilience. And I'm so happy that that happened for you in terms of the fact that you were able to, because I think for a lot of people, even if they had the means to go 2 hours, they might question, like, is it even worth it? Like, is that something I can commit to? And I know distance can be, physical distance can be, like, such a barrier to people getting the care they need. And that kind of, like, leads me to thinking about, like, what we're going through now in 2020 and how so many, healthcare professionals are now able to offer Zoom therapy or over Google Meets and teletherapy in general, and how even once things, you know, quotations, go back to normal, I think that's going to be, access that we need to continue. As I'm even seeing that, like, I'm able to reach so many more clients who can't physically come in for whatever reasons, whether it's distance, whether it's, you know, like, crippling depression, whether it's just difficult, you know, to see someone physically in person. I'm seeing that we just have, like, such a stronger reach now that we can offer these accommodations to folks. And I imagine, I wonder what that would have been like for you. I don't know if exposure therapy, CBT therapy would work as well via telehealth, but I wonder if, you know, had that been an option, if that would have alleviated some of the extra stress on you and your parents too.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would like to see it be an option for more people. Like you said, you know, once this pandemic is over, I know, like, for myself, going in person is really important, especially with my OCD, which I was diagnosed with a couple years ago. You know, I think going to see my therapist via telemedicine has at least helped a lot in the meantime. And I definitely think that there's, like, a large amount of success that can be had, you know, not just with, you know, phobia disorders and things like that, but just with, you know, general, like, anxiety and depression, like you said, via telemedicine visits. So, and it's definitely something that I also really want to see more of a structure in place, to where, you know, people aren't necessarily, like, taking advantage of the fact that they can use telemedicine visits, right? So, like, telemedicine mm-hmm. is, like, first offered to the people who actually need it. Like, yeah. you know, people who live far away or who are in, you know, rural areas or who don't, you know, have personal transportation and things like that. So.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think there needs to be, once, I mean, everything does, we go back to seeing people in person. I definitely think it should be something that's assessed for need, and a conversation about really making sure that, yeah, for the people who are capable of showing up in person, I think it can be so beneficial to attend therapy in person. And that's my preference, to be honest. But yeah, for those who are looking for therapy and they're like, I just can't make it in for whatever reasons. I do hope that we do develop some processes for being able to prioritize those folks and get them, you know, the care that they need if it's not in person via telemedicine.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And do you mind telling me just a little bit about, like, in terms of your experience in therapy, what were some of the challenges of going to therapy and kind of like thinking of what's hard about therapy that people don't talk about as much or that you maybe didn't assume you'd run into in therapy?
I think that, you know, therapy for the most part was like a smooth process for me because I'm extremely regimented. Mm-hmm. Like I'm very type A. And I think that exposure therapy especially like goes along with that because it's like, okay, you're going to take these steps this week and these mm-hmm. steps next week and that kind of thing. But I think as I started to get better, I think like the challenge is just keeping that up, like with your personal life and finding, you know, the time to, and the motivation to do what you're supposed to do outside of therapy, yes. in your life. Right. So like, if you're given homework, you know, like not waiting until like the day before, to do that and things like that. And I think that also goes into something that we don't talk a lot about, which is the fact that, you know, you really work together with your therapist. It's like really any practitioner, like your doctor as well, you know, you're working with them to kind of like make the treatment plan that's best for you. So if you're in a place in a space where you don't necessarily need to like work on a lot of things like outside of therapy anymore, like you have mm-hmm. the flexibility to kind of like change your, you know, treatment plan. And if you have a good therapist, they should be telling you that. But even if they don't, like definitely, bring that up because you definitely, you know, want to make sure that your therapy experience is working for you. And sometimes, you know, there's just so much going on that we, you know, don't have like the motivation or the time or anything like that to do the kind of homework. If you are in therapy, that kind of gives you homework to do that.
Yeah. And like, I think I've said this plenty of times before, like I'm not typically a therapist that likes giving homework only because I'm like, homework feels like it comes with such pressure, but I do give like weekly challenges. But one thing I love about weekly challenges / homework is that even if like you as a client aren't able to work on it this week, we can talk about why you weren't able to work on it. So like, even if you know that you didn't do the homework, it's so helpful to be honest. And I think that's an important factor of being in therapy too. Like, just be honest. Like, you gain nothing by lying to your therapist, like nothing at all. Being honest about like parts that were challenging, or maybe, as you said, maybe your treatment plan needs to be adjusted. Maybe this thing that we've been working on isn't something you want to do outside of here because it's not a priority right now. Maybe you have other pressing things and issues that you want to start exploring and working on. Until maybe this other one comes back up too. So that's so important.
Yeah. And I love how you like talk about, you know, talking with your therapist about like why you didn't do something. Cause like, even I know since we've been, you know, in quarantine, like I'll be, you know, like I just didn't want to get out of bed today. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like we're in quarantine. I'm like, I'm not going outside. I'm not doing anything. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to just find the motivation to do even that small thing you told me to do. But so it's like not you. It's just, you know, it's not the activity. It's just the situation that we're in. So I do think it is important to kind of like talk through that with your therapist.
Yeah. And I mean, that just shows that you're human, like in that we as therapists, like I think that helps the power differential not feel like a power over dynamic. It's more the power with, like, I am not your teacher, your professor who is here to reprimand you for not doing the homework because you're an adult. Like, you're making a choice to come here. But let's talk about why it was hard. Let's talk about why it was difficult. And as you said, like, we need to be now more than ever, like, honest about these days where we're struggling because we are living in times that we couldn't have like guessed we'd be in. We have no rubric, no way to know how to navigate a pandemic because this hasn't happened for us before. And so I think it also invites us to be a little kinder to ourselves by being able to say, like, I didn't do it because, like you said, it was hard getting out of bed today. And that's real. And I am not gonna like judge anyone for that, because being in a pandemic is tough. Being on lockdown is tough. Not seeing your community, your people, getting out of the house. It's just really hard to find that motivation when it feels like all our days are the same.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and this is the part of the show where I like to consider it kind of the PSA to therapists and other like helping professionals. But these are the therapists' do's and don'ts. So what should therapists do, in your opinion?
I definitely think that one thing that really makes a therapist stand out for me is, you know, actually like remembering things about my life. And I don't know if that's like, you know, where someone has to like devise a system for that or mm-hmm. what, because I know that therapists see a lot of people. So I'm not like expecting them to remember like every single thing, but it's just, you know, if a therapist like consistently gets something wrong, like mm-hmm. details wrong, that don't necessarily have to do with, you know, like the overall like end goal, it still mm-hmm. just kind of feels like, oh, it just makes it a little like impersonal. And I think that therapy mm-hmm. always works better when you have an appropriate level of kind of that like person to person like relationship. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably like my top do. It's kind of hard to think about like do's, because I feel like all of my therapists over time have been pretty good. Mm-hmm. And I'm the kind of person where I'm like, wow, these are the things that I remember, the ones that are really bad. And so I don't have a ton of like dues. My dues would be like, I don't know, be like my therapist, but y'all don't know them.
I like that do though. Like that is so important. And I know that it's not asking your therapist to remember every single detail, but it's asking your therapist to also like have a system in place, because that's how you build rapport. It's like when you remember my partner's name or this best friend that I talk about a lot. And I'm not asking that of you to remember every little detail after the first session either. But there is a kind of familiarity, a kind of comfort that comes from, okay, you're actually trying to get to know me and remember these things, that I think is so beneficial to making clients feel affirmed and seen. And like, you're actually listening and not just that they're coming here and talking and you're zoning out the whole time and you're saying, all right, great, see you next week.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and what about those therapist don'ts?
I think a therapist don't is definitely talking about yourself. I think it's appropriate to talk about yourself a little bit, but I think mm-hmm. it's human nature sometimes when people like come to you with a problem for you to respond with like a personal anecdote about yourself. Mm-hmm. But that kind of like takes all of the focus off of the person who needs it. Mm-hmm. And so I think as a therapist, if you're like consistently doing that, that can be really frustrating for, you know, your patient, because they kind of feel like, well, what about me? Like I, mm-hmm. you know, I'm here to talk about myself. Like, I don't want to talk about your problems. So
yeah.
I think that's something that's like definitely really important to be mindful of.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something that clinicians should always ask themselves when you are doing like self-disclosure. You have to ask yourself like, okay, how does this serve like the client? Like, what is the reasoning that I'm like giving this? Is it because I just want to let you know like, ooh, I did that too, or like that happens to me too? Or am I like using this kind of self-disclosure to normalize a behavior or a symptom or something that you experience? But yeah, I do think that therapists and clinicians just need to be very careful about that, because I do feel like it could really decenter the client and make the client feel like, okay, you're just kind of taking over the session. You're taking up my 50 minutes, and I don't really want to know the extra stuff about you too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And why would you recommend therapy for people like you and I, for people like us?
You know, I definitely really recommend therapy for Black people. I think one, because it's not as pervasive an activity or, you know, something that we do for ourselves in our culture as it is in other cultures. And that's, you know, really problematic because, you know, we are affected by so many things collectively. And mm-hmm. I think that we don't even like always really know like how much it's affecting us. And then to just be dealing with our personal lives on top of that is just, you know, I think it's always, always, always beneficial to see a therapist at least one time just to mm-hmm. check in and see if like there's anything that, you know, you maybe can improve on or something like that. And just, you know, to make sure that you're just, you know, like really handling your world well. And I think that if like doing that alone for Black people is just so much harder than it is for everyone else.
Yeah, absolutely. Just having, I think the beauty of just having 50 minutes, whether it's once a week, you know, twice a month, however long, to just know that like this is my space and I can make it whatever I need it to be. Is just really a valuable tool if you have access to it. It's a valuable resource to really be able to take advantage of, because I don't think we get a lot of moments to kind of have those real talk moments with, you know, close friends and loved ones like we'd like to. And then even if we do, it's not that we always need their point of view. Sometimes we need a completely, you know, disconnected sort of person who doesn't know us, doesn't know our friends and our family, to really like take a look at the situation and offer an outside perspective, just to give us some perspective about how we want to like move forward with that thing that we've been thinking about too.
Yeah, I totally agree. That third person is so important, that outside person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, honestly, like, sure, I could probably tell my mom a lot of things. Do I want to? No. Am I going to feel comfortable doing it? No. Is she going to give me like completely like advice that doesn't kind of serve her in a way, or like her idea of what she wants for my life? Like, there's no guarantee that she can give me that kind of unbiased sort of feedback that I need. And I think that's why also you should not see a therapist that you know. I don't know if enough listeners know that too. Like, sure, if it's a therapist who's like a friend of a friend, by all means, if you feel comfortable. But I am someone too where I'm from a small town. So like my mom was like, oh, you need to come down here, you know, provide therapy to some of these church folks and your cousins. And I'm like, mom, no dual relationships, please. Like, it's just a little too close to home. And the way I challenge people who don't know me may not go over the same way that people who do know me.
Yeah, exactly. And as someone who's like not a therapist, I'm definitely one who will very quickly, you know, tell you like, this is above my pay grade. You need to go see someone about this. So,
And before we get out of here, I'd love to hear, what is your self-care plug? What is that thing that helps you when you're feeling like you need to find balance, when you need to find quiet, when you need to just feel like you're restoring lost energy just from doing what you do daily? What is your self-care plug?
I don't have any specific like products or anything that I want to plug as like a self-care plug, but I definitely,
oh, it could be activity too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, my self-care advice is to learn yourself and, know yourself, because, that is what's going to guide your self-care. Like, my self-care is, you know, to get myself like out of the house and just to spend time with myself, but like outside of my apartment, because my apartment is such a relaxed environment. It's like too relaxed sometimes. So to get out and like actually be active with myself, like, you know, go and shop around for some food and, you know, do things like that, you know, on a sunny day. That's like my favorite thing to do. And then it's like so simple, but it brings me like so much joy. Like, I'm one of those people who like sings to themselves in the grocery store, because I'm just like, you know, like just to get out and like make sure that I'm like out and like active and, you know, just doing things. And really, that makes me feel like I'm really living my life. And so I think, you know, for some people that might be a chore. So, you know, it really is a situation where, you know, you have to know yourself. And just like really pay attention to the little things, like every day that kind of give you joy, and then, you know, mm-hmm. make sure that you incorporate them more and more when you need them, like when you need that pick me up.
Yeah. I love that. Like, I just love how you led with that, because like knowing yourself is so important, because I feel like, you know, self-care is something that we were talking about so much more during a pandemic. And I feel like a lot of people will like judge their self-care based on it seeming like indulgent or like something that like it has to be some grandiose like act of self-love for it to be deemed self-care. And I just love hearing like it can be the mundane things, like just simply walking out that front door and being outside for the quick walk to the grocery store or 7-Eleven or wherever. And it might change completely. It might be completely different the next day. And so it's about really, really being in tune with yourself and asking yourself, like, what do I need today? Like, what am I looking for? What can benefit me to help me, you know, log in tomorrow for work or to do all of this homework or write these papers that I don't want to write? I think that's so important. So I really, really love that.
Yeah. I mean, I think we don't really talk about like being yourself as a form of self-care, but it is. And I think that's like one of the biggest like takeaways that I've had from therapy is just like really the confidence to like live my life on my own terms. And so even when I think about like what I have to do to keep myself well, as someone who, you know, has like anxiety and OCD and things like that, like not being afraid to be like, you know what, I have to stay home. Like a lot of time, a lot of the time, you know, my anxiety has, you know, has led to me being like in physical pain. And so like, you know, leaving a party early, you know, like doing the things that you need to do, for yourself and not, you know, being afraid to like, you know, just tell people like, hey, I got to do this. Like, I got to do this for myself. Like, you know, this is just how my life is. You know, and doing that, it's like so important. And you'll feel so much better.
Yeah. I really, really love that. Ayana, it has been a really, 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 really huge pleasure, speaking with you today. I do want to ask you before we get out of here, do you want to let people know where to find you on social media?
Yeah, sure. You can find me on social media at XOXO_AyanaJ. Ayana spelled like the congresswoman. My profiles are private, but you know, there's no point in doing a podcast like this if you can't contact me. So definitely send me that like DM request or anything if you like want to chat. I'm totally open about anything. So.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show and for your vulnerability and just openness to, again, add so many more perspective to what we're doing here with this podcast. Like, I just really love that we can hear so many examples of people of color's mental health journey and why it's important for us to really kind of see this as something that we need to do and consider, whether that looks like therapy, whether that looks like, you know, yoga, whether it looks like any other things that help kind of spark an awareness of where we are mentally and, you know, really figuring out what's going to work for us. I just really appreciate having these conversations. So I'll go ahead and leave you be for this evening, but everybody listening, go ahead and stay tuned for where to find us on social media, and I'll be right back. This concludes another session of Black People Go to Therapy Too. I appreciate every single one of y'all who support us and continue to break the stigmas surrounding our mental health journeys and the care that we deserve. Be sure to check us out on Instagram at Black People Therapy, Facebook at Black People Go to Therapy Too, and Twitter at Black PPL Therapy. And are you a person of color with experiences in therapy and a willingness to talk about your mental health journey on the podcast? Great. Check out the episode description for our guest survey, or you can email us at blackpeopletherapy@gmail.com to learn more. Thanks and be well, y'all.